Well, good afternoon and welcome to this post-budget 2019 webinar, where we will explore the implications of the proposals presented in budget 2019 for the health research and health innovation communities. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Deborah Gordon-Elbabetti, and I'm the President and CEO of Research Canada. And on behalf of Research Canada, I'm delighted to host this first in a series of webinars for our members. I would like to take this opportunity to welcome the Chair of the Board of Research Canada, Dr. Robert McMaster, who's with us today, and the Vice Chair, Dr. Rose Goldstein. I would also like to welcome other Research Canada board members who are on the call, and of course, our members and some of our highly valued partners. Our special guest for today's webinar, as you all know, is Michelle McLean, Senior Vice President of Health and Wellness at Hill & Knowlton Strategies, who I will introduce to you shortly. But a few words about the webinar today. As you can see from the agenda that we've provided to you, I will set the stage for Michelle's remarks, and then she'll follow, providing us with her insights into Tuesday's budget. And then we'll spend the lion's share of our time today on your questions to Michelle. That's what this webinar is about. I'll then provide some final thoughts. One caveat for all of you is to please keep in mind that the ink is barely dry on Budget 2019, and a number of proposals in the document have yet to be fleshed out by our civil service. Therefore, Michelle will not have all the answers today. However, I think the discussion will help us to better formulate our thoughts and next steps. Now, a few quick comments about Budget 2019. It was indeed an election budget focused on targeted investments in our sector that would resonate with voters. The strategic investments in selected areas of research really stood in stark contrast to the funding windfall across fundamental science that we saw in last year's budget. And I know many of us are wondering what this means for the future. Was the decision of the government to focus on targeted research investments solely based on the fact that this is an election year? Or is this a harbinger for what is to come in the future if the Liberals receive a second mandate? Also, in terms of advocacy itself, many institutions and organizations lobbied for a piece of the budget, breaking the united front that the research community presented last year when it demanded that the government follow the recommendations of the Fundamental Science Review. So is this a new trend among advocacy organizations that we'll see also in the future? At the same time, the budget promised through the proposed Strategic Science Fund a new, more principled approach to funding, which will presumably increase accountability and transparency of research funding. But what impact will this fund have on granting council budgets? And what about peer review? We also saw some much needed investments in research trainees. However, there was very little for postdoctoral fellows, except a parental leave extension for those who receive granting council funds. And many of us felt this was truly a missed opportunity to invest in a highly skilled group of Canadians who are vital to the success of the knowledge economy. At the same time, Budget 2019 committed to greater support for Indigenous post-secondary students, which I'm sure we can all agree is an important step for this community. There was no money for the Research Support Fund, but once again, this was a voter budget and voters do not relate to this kind of spending. On the health innovation side of the question, Budget 2019 committed to both investments and legislative change that will modernize regulatory standards to help accelerate the pace of innovation and deliver impact to patients sooner. Research Canada was also pleased to see the elimination of the income threshold for accessing enhanced credit through the SR&ED tax incentive program. But clearly, there are many questions about Budget 2019, such as how this Strategic Science Fund will work. Will the National Dementia Strategy include funds for research? How will the new PharmaCare program affect drug pricing? And ultimately, the role of Canada's research-based pharmaceutical and biotech companies, and which patients rely upon for access to innovative therapeutics. So luckily today we have the indomitable Michelle McLean to help us answer some of these questions. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Michelle. For many of you who know her, you know that Michelle is an experienced lawyer, public affairs and communications professional in both the corporate and not-for-profit sectors. And her background includes a decade of public affairs and communications experience, including almost 3 years as a Vice President of Public Affairs at the Mental Health Commission of Canada. Michelle has led and managed many large-scale national campaigns, including a campaign for the funding of the Cancer Control Strategy for Canada. Michelle has twice been named a top 100 lobbyist in Ottawa, and we all know why. Michelle completed her undergraduate degree at Queen's University and her law degree at the University of Western Ontario, and she spent 4 years as a litigation associate at Osler, Hoskin, and Harcourt. So Michelle, over to you.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, Deborah. Really pleased to be with you. Look forward to your questions. As Deborah said, I'm going to provide you with a high-level overview of the budget, its health investments, its investments in health research, share some of my own insights and thoughts about the budget, where the government may be headed. But more importantly, I'm really looking forward to hearing from you and answering some of your questions. So let's jump right in. Deborah referenced that this budget is set against a very political backdrop, given this is an election year, and that is very true. And I think it informed much of what we see in the budget. Clearly, election is top of mind for government. And yet, of course, what is top of mind for opposition parties is still the SNC-Lavalin affair, which you saw caused significant disruption even in the tabling and presenting of the budget and the budget speech on Tuesday. So we shouldn't lose sight that politics is informing this budget as much as financial and other considerations. And certainly I think I'll touch on that as I go forward in terms of why certain things were included in the budget, why others weren't there. Others have observed, and I'll echo their comments, that the budget itself is quite thin when you think about the new initiatives that were included. So much of the budget document is either appendix material or a summary of what the government has done to date, or frankly, a rearticulation of things the government has promised to do in the past. So for instance, whether it's PharmaCare or the Strategic Science Fund, the government has already been in the public space speaking about those two initiatives. So in terms of net new inclusions in the budget, it was actually quite thin. But that shouldn't come as a surprise. In an election year, this is very much about running on your record and looking forward to where the government is going. The other thing to note about many of the commitments in the budget is that they start in some cases in the next fiscal year, but many of them are out beyond that. So future-oriented promises, frankly, without a lot of details for the community, which will come, frankly, through the following months while the House is still sitting and then into the election campaign. In terms of key constituencies that the government was looking to reach, certainly seniors, millennials, Indigenous communities, but that middle class thematic that has been present, frankly, in every budget that of the four that the Liberals have tabled was certainly present again. So I'm first going to review some of the highlights in terms of the health commitments, and then I'll move on to health research. So let's start with PharmaCare. That's obviously the headline, I think, coming out of the health portion of the budget, certainly receiving a lot of attention. But as I say, not a lot of new information released in the budget document. Certainly there's some funding put against what the interim report recommendations released earlier in March. But again, no indication of which model ultimately will be recommended by the advisory council, nor which the Liberal Party during the campaign or the government will move forward with. I think it was notable to see the commitment around rare diseases. That's a very encouraging sign for the community. And not to cast any pall over that advancement, but I think we need to, as a community, be careful not to conflate the fund for reimbursement with the regulatory changes that we're going to need to see to ensure appropriate access for people living with rare diseases. So when you think about the review and assessment of drugs, that may need to change. I'm just going to pause. Is this still you? If you cannot see us, please do let us know, or if you can't hear us, do let us know.
There we go.
So in terms of the PharmaCare proposal itself, there's still a lot to be worked out. So even a reference to a national formulary, not clear how drugs, you know, what type of drugs we'll see on the formulary, but more importantly, what requirement will there be for provinces, for instance, to list every drug that's on the national formulary? Again, not clear. So I would say a lot of details still to be worked out. The question I'm probably receiving the most frequently are questions around the new agency that will be tasked with overseeing the implementation of PharmaCare. And again, not a lot of details provided either within the budget document or in follow-up questions to the government. And what I would say is this. Obviously, some of the functionality that this new agency would have exists now presently within CADTH, or when you think about negotiating with the companies, we have that at PCPA. So we know there's going, while the government intends to set up a new agency, almost certainly some of the expertise and functionality that exists in other organizations will have to come under the umbrella of this new agency. So what it means for CADTH, that's obviously a question I've received frequently since Tuesday. I don't think we know, and frankly, I don't think the government knows, and that's why they have not been more forthcoming with details, because as you can appreciate, establishing this new body and the future of CADTH has got to be negotiated with the provinces and territories. So the government's not really in a position at this point to give us more details, because so much yet is still to be decided between those levels of government. I'm happy to take more questions, obviously, on PharmaCare, but I think the last thing I would note is I had the opportunity to speak with a finance political staff since the budget was tabled, and he indicated, you know, obviously the government's pleased with the pace of the work of the advisory committee and PharmaCare coming along. In his words, it's time to turn attention to the PMPRB reforms. So I know that that has been something that the community's been waiting to see in terms of Canada Gazette 2. I expect we will see that certainly before the House rises. Christy, I don't see anything, but as long as you still see everything, that's great. In terms of another piece of the budget that received a lot of attention, the $50 million contribution to public health agency to support the implementation of the dementia strategy is obviously notable. Again, not a lot of details about how that money was to be used. And in conversation, Deborah did ask me whether I thought there'd be a research component to some of that funding. Again, the department has not said publicly the scope of that, even the strategy itself is yet to be released. That's coming in the spring. So no way to know for certain. But based on the conversations I've had in Ottawa, I think there is opportunity and there will be some element of research addressed by that $50 million. Some of the more notable other inclusions in the budget on the health side, there were a commitment around organ donation and transplantation, and that's around data and performance systems. A suicide prevention crisis hotline service, again, receiving an investment. And also notably on opioids, again, a $30 million investment over 5 years to address, in their words, persistent gaps in harm reduction and treatment. Again, open question whether that will mean new research, but I'd be very surprised if the government thought it could address those gaps without having new research. So certainly an opportunity for discussion about how best to invest those funds. In terms of health research, Deborah made mention of it in her remarks. There were a lot of targeted investments this year, very different than the approach the government had to health research and science last year. So we saw investments in stem cell, Brain Canada, Terry Fox, ovarian cancer, genome, Triumph, Let's Talk Science. So a lot of groups targeted. I don't think we should be surprised by that very specific targeting. In some cases, I think to address some funding issues that came out from, frankly, canceling the NCE program in this case of stem cell, but other groups as well that require funding before the Strategic Science Fund is going to be up and operating. So I think that explains some of those targeted investments. But the other thing that I think we need to be realistic about is the politics in an election year. So I am not surprised to see women, veterans, Indigenous people, seniors, targeted research trying to appeal to those constituencies. Again, not a surprising political overlay of those decisions. But I think it is a reasonable question to ask, and I found it interesting, even in the document itself, the target investments are separate from the Strategic Science Fund, but of course that fund is there in some way to rationalize and ensure that investments are made in a holistic and comprehensive way. So it is curious that while they recognize the need to do so in this budget, they continue to make those very targeted decisions. In terms of the fund itself, the Strategic Science Fund, or SSF, as I'm going to call it here on out, it's difficult to know how it's going to work. And again, had the opportunity to speak with an ISED official, they don't know how it's going to work, to be quite honest. They're still building it. So I have received questions about whether the government's trying to move sort of an agenda forward without including the community. I think it's a fair characterization to say that they are still working out the details and they don't have them yet to share with us. It's very much like they're building the ladder as they're climbing it. So I don't think there's any deviation from some of the things they've said in the past, either through budget documents or policy documents, but there's still a considerable amount of work that needs to be done with respect to that fund. Now that could be seen as a good news story for our community, given that if all decisions haven't been taken, there is still an opportunity to influence. And so encourage you to reach out and engage the department as they continue to work through the fund. So overall, I guess my comment about the budget, I think the name, and I'm just checking it again. So the budget was entitled Investing in the Middle Class. And last night, as I gave some thought to my remarks today, I retitled it Budget 2019, stay tuned for more details because the government has a lot to work out. So they have a general idea of where they're going. They've set aside some funding to do so, but the particulars of which in many cases, and certainly with respect to health and health research, really are to come. So with that, I'll stop. I want to leave lots of time for questions. You can unmute your mic. I'm looking at Christy. I think you can unmute your mic to ask me directly, or you can send a written question in through the chat box as Christy referenced earlier. So over you to Deborah. You may want to open up.
Thank you very much. So we'd like to open up the Q&A portion of our discussion. I think we have a question from Julie, if we can see it. I'm just going to
minimize that.
Yeah, if I can minimize this. Christy, can you help me and get rid of the, thank you. So here we go. So Julie is asking, should we reach out to influence the Strategic Science Fund? Michelle, over to you.
Great question. So obviously Minister Duncan's office is playing a key lead role on the political side. So again, reaching into Minister Duncan's office with your views about some of the considerations that should be factored into the fund. But ISED as the Innovation, Science and Economic Development Department, ISED, is leading on the department side. So Deborah can probably later follow up with you in terms of particulars, but the department is ISED and Minister Duncan still has the political lead for the fund.
And Stephanie, thank you, Julie, for that question. Stephanie is asking, do you think the Strategic Science Fund will be delivered via the Granting Council agencies as it falls under science?
It's a great question, Stephanie. And I hazard to take a guess because, again, there's so little information publicly available. My guess right now is no, not under the granting agencies. I think there's a reason that they're keeping this a bit separate. We will see slightly different parameters. To Deborah's earlier question, I don't think peer review, for instance, will be featured as prominently as it is through the granting council. So I suspect the fund will sit outside of the granting councils. That's not to say they won't be involved. I think they certainly will be. I don't think it will fall under them.
Thank you. Just to pick up on that question, one of the things that I read when I was reading the budget is there was some reference to a body, and I interpreted that to mean, Michelle, it was the new Council for Science and Innovation, that somehow it would be directly involved in administering this fund or in the decision making.
I think either are equally possible. I would be very surprised if the new council was not involved. Mm-hmm. The new council, of course, struck to provide the government advice and so on. So there's absolutely going to be a role for that council, mm-hmm. Whether it's advisory or governance, I think still to be determined.
Okay. Now, we have another question coming from Julie again. What is the best way to advocate for tri-council funds in a budget year? And she's speaking, of course, about CIHR, NSERC, and SHRC.
Right. Great question. I actually think last year is a best practice that we can look to, not just because of the result, but I think it's a basic truth in government relations and advocacy that the more unity there is in the community, the more likely you are to succeed. Governments, although they do it, they prefer not to be in a position to pick winners and losers. So when the community comes with a common position, common messaging, it's much easier for government to take decision, knowing that the community is supportive as a whole. So I think one of the best ways to advance for, again, continued growth in the tri-council investments is to come as a community. Now, that said, let me also say that the fact that the government did not approach research funding on a tri-council basis is not a failure of advocacy. It is more a reflection of an election year. So I am not surprised to see targeted investments. The government will talk about its record in science through the election campaign, I'm sure, and they will want to have very tangible examples to use with the electorate that will resonate. So to me, the fact that the tri-councils didn't see additional investments, it should not be seen as a failure of advocacy, but more the budget climate that we're in.
Mm. Thank you. Raj has a question for us. He says, could you please comment on the bringing innovation to regulation section? I would appreciate your thoughts on the regulatory roadmaps and sandboxes.
Yes. Raj, I'm going to have to apologize and say I've only flipped through that section. So as you can appreciate, Budget Week in Ottawa is a very, very busy week. And I've been with many clients through the week trying to unpack some of this. So I have not looked in depth into that. I'm happy to do so later and through an email connection from Deborah, address your question.
Thank you, Raj, for that question. So we'll get back to you later on that, Raj, because it is a very important question around the proposals for the regulatory regime, which, of course, the medical device sector, Raj Harkins from that sector, is very interested to learn more about. The other question, so you were talking a little bit about PharmaCare, and I know we have some members on the call today who represent Canada's research-based pharmaceutical companies, and of course this sector has been in negotiation with the government around drug pricing and the reforms that are being put forward by PMPRB. So with the announcement of a PharmaCare strategy, Michelle, I'm wondering what your thoughts are and how that PharmaCare program will impact drug pricing. But I also know we have members who are from the charitable sector, and they're going to be very focused on access to new therapeutics for patients and patient care. So from the perspective of both industry and the patients who receive these therapeutics, what is your thinking about what the government is proposing and its impact on these two groups?
Right. So actually, on PharmaCare, the patient interest, I think, is quite similar to industry's interest. At the end of the day, we are all interested in ensuring that Canadians have the best access possible to innovative therapies and the therapies that they need. So PharmaCare, as it's presently conceived, is so ill-defined, it's hard to know where the government is going. Mm-hmm. However, most of us believe that despite, I think, the strong desire of some to see a universal program with government as first payer, the federal government is unlikely to pursue that option. I think the model they will land on is to address the gaps in the system. So whether that is underinsured, no insurance, or insurance, again, to deal with rare diseases. So I think they will go with a fill-the-gap approach. However, the discussions I've had with many, many health charities, and again with industry, is the concern that I myself have and many observers is, again, PharmaCare, I think, can be a very strong tool for government to ensure access, but we must make sure that while bringing in PharmaCare, we don't do that at the expense of new and, frankly, more expensive drugs. That's where we know the innovation is happening. And so the question of formularies, how prices are being negotiated, are so critical. It isn't enough to put a process in place and say, we'll make sure that every Canadian is covered for the cost of their prescription drugs if they don't have access to the drugs they need. And that, to me, is the piece that we really won't understand until some of the questions that are outstanding are answered. Where will the government fall on the question of regulatory change at PMPRB? What will be part of a national formulary? What will the regulatory review process of a new agency look like? So I think no one disagrees in principle with PharmaCare, but the devil is in the details, and we don't have enough yet to really understand what the implications are going to be.
Yeah.